In this podcast, we will be talking with Michelle Gorman, the owner of Integration Acres, Albany, Ohio.
My name is Michelle Gorman. I'm co-owner of Integration Acres and also the cheesemaker here. So just maybe for the sake of the aesthetics of what we're talking about, give me an idea as a business owner. What's your average day like?
Well, my average day varies depending on the time of year. We're a seasonal dairy, so this time of year, I would say I focus a lot more on the financial part of our business, strategizing for the year, catching up on taxes. It feels a little bit more relaxed. I can kind of narrow and focus on some of the areas that I can't once kitting and cheese making start. Mm-hmm. But probably March through October, a typical day starts around 7 in the cheese room and ends around 3 in the cheese room, and that's just start to finish of a cheese product.
I see.
Yeah.
So your main job then is to collect the milk and make whatever product you have orders
yeah.
for that day.
We have about 3 part-time people that work for us. Before, you may know this, that Chris, before he was a county commissioner, it was just the 2 of us working here, so it was just more of a husband-wife team. But when he took this elected official position, I needed help. Mm-hmm. So we ended up having, you know, additional employees, which is, it's the only way I could get it done. I mean, there's no way he was going to be able to milk, and I can't milk and make cheese. And it's, you know, it's kind of evolved over the past 5 years into a little bit different. And we're also not just a goat dairy. We have other arms of our business with the pawpaw products, with other non-forest timber products, with this Airbnb. So, you know, that's part of what I do also is getting this sold. Uh-huh. So it's every day is different. It really is. And I throw 2 human children into the mix too. So,
yeah. 3.
Yeah.
Yes, I know how that goes. So in terms of what you're doing, what do you think have been the real challenges other than there's too much work and, you know, how do you...
There's never a shortage of that. You're right.
Yeah.
I think for us, it's been an evolution. When we first started in 2007 is when we were licensed, we were kind of the only game in town. Our main customer was the Athens Farmers Market, and we were doing a lot of direct sales, very successful. But probably in the last 4 to 5 years, roughly, we've kind of seen a switch. We have a competitor in town that has cut into our business, so that hurts. We've switched more to wholesale. In some ways, that makes your life easier because it's easier to prepare larger items and just get it out the door.
And are those just sold locally, though?
Becky Rondi with Mushroom Harvest helps get our products up in Columbus.
Oh, I see.
And again, years ago when it was Chris and I mostly, I would sometimes take one day a week and go to Columbus and hit up some places. But they're helping us with that distribution now, which helps a lot, that I don't have to take time out of my day to drive around Columbus. But, you know, we realize we always have to sort of stay one step ahead of what might be coming down the pike with market shifts and competition, and that's kind of been a challenge. And seeing what, you know, 2007, goat cheese in Ohio was definitely, ooh, wow, but now it's becoming more mainstream. And we try to research, but it doesn't seem like as many people, are there economic forces at work here, you know, the political climate. I mean, you try to we analyze it constantly, what's happening here?
I think that's what makes a good business person is that massaging all the time of trying to stay that one step ahead for sure.
Right.
One of the things that I think is a challenge is I'll just back up and say that most of us that have goat milk know we have a really good product. But then how do we get the marketplace to understand that that product is often superior to other kinds of milk and certainly the way other kinds of milk is processed? And I wondered, what do you think is the trend that's going to change, or what is the thinking that's going to change that customer base to want to come to us and buy that?
I think
that
that's
cheese?
A real challenge because, as you know, it costs money. I mean, it's how can you still be profitable and sell it to people? I mean, finding that sweet spot where people are willing to pay what you know it's worth for all your time and all the effort and money with feeding animals, everything goes into that product. How can you sell that? And that's I'll be honest, we haven't raised our prices in many, many years. Mm-hmm. And we have competition in the form of, you know, Murray's Cheese Shop and our local Kroger. I mean, I think when people can go to one place and buy everything they need or want, a lot of people gravitate towards that. You've probably thought about this too. I mean, that's a huge challenge because goat cheese products are a high-end food item. Yet we're living in a very impoverished region.
Yeah.
And so there's this sort of bubble of Athens, Ohio, with the university there, that there's folks there that are willing and able to pay. You come out here where we are living and producing this cheese, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's people with no running water down the street.
Mm-hmm.
So
when someone figures
that one out, let me know, because yeah. It's
well, it is that access to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we get there? And one of the things that you just mentioned is working with another farm and that they're transporting product for you.
Right.
So what do you think have been the successes in terms of working with other farms or even other farm women? You know, how has that helped or hindered you in some way?
Well, I think I'm always, you know, I think it's always fun to kind of work with industry colleagues and get together. And it's so rare, though, because everyone's so swamped, you know, with animals and producing and everything like that. And we are so grateful to Green Edge and Mushroom Harvest because, you know, that's just something that would be more and more difficult for us to do. Then, you know, I think I referenced having competition that also it's like, how do you work with your competition or do you just go side by side? And, you know, that's been a little bit of a challenging one for us to try to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Athens, very small market. Only so many people are going to buy goat cheese, right?
Well, maybe unless we convince the world that it's the better product. So
yeah, I mean, I think the world maybe knows, but Americans, you know, if we were in another country, we'd be golden, maybe. That wouldn't even be a question, right?
Yeah, in France.
Exactly, or Spain, or wherever, you know, the rest of the world,
gets
it. But, you know, we've worked with Snowville, too. They've been great over the years. We buy cow's milk from them on occasion, and I make one product with that. And they've been awesome as far as technical support, equipment purchases over the years. They can help us find stainless for nothing. I mean, most of our cheese facility is, you know, built with recycled or rehabbed, rewelded materials. You know, we've purchased no $20,000 table.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been great. And I think that's what's also great about Athens community in particular. I mean, I'm sure it exists elsewhere, but I think we're pretty lucky to have this kind of network. Yeah,
where people work together and help each other.
Yeah,
and that's, I think, a big part of what I like to think about is, for example, when I met with Rachel Turman, the idea of particularly women networking and helping with education and other things, mm-hmm. like you're saying with transport.
Yeah.
But that there's no real organized movement for that. Because she was talking about, you know, some kind of national group or something, but I don't see it. I mean, we've been trying to start the group Women Grow Ohio, and we came in under Rural Action Swing, which hasn't really changed anything yet. But what we have found is that, like you said, there's a lack of time, there's a lack of willingness to travel. There's also a lack of broadband and mobile access.
Sure.
So even if we
have that too.
If we wanted to do something online,
it
really limits. And I just wonder how you see, if you were to be more involved with a group of some kind of cooperative or something, how would that benefit, or how would you want that to benefit your business?
Well, I certainly think we would be really interested in any kind of distribution arm of that. You know, that would be the biggest thing, I think, for us. I don't know how much, you know, if you're thinking more like support, like tech support or education support. And this is where Celeste, I think, input would be helpful, because here we have someone who's young and is passionate about animals, and this is what she wants to do with her life. But she really could use a little bit of all that support that's out there. And she doesn't, she has, her internet is spotty at best, you know, these kind of technical things that hinder people. And I feel like those are the people we need to tell also, like, you got to make sure you've researched this before you think this is what you want to do with your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you, it's easy to, like, you know, buy a bunch of goats and milk them, and then what? If you have nothing, no product you can make, if you don't know who you would ever sell this product to, and you've got to be willing to work with state and federal agencies
right. To
do all this,
right.
And which I have actually enjoyed. Our Ohio Department of Ag folks are great. It's been a really good experience for me. But I know for some people that can even be a deterrent, you know, just little things like having
standards
to follow the rules.
That's right, standards and regulations.
Right, mm-hmm. And with the new FSMA guidelines coming down, the Food Safety Modernization Act, with the FDA. I mean, I had to spend 2 days at a training last week to get this certification. And, you know, it's no longer the HACCP plan. It's going to be this much more comprehensive document. You've got to be willing to jump through those hoops and spend the money and the time. Things you maybe just wouldn't have thought about.
Right.
That it's not fields of lavender, you know?
Yeah.
And I always like to tell people that because I feel like, I don't know, when I was younger, there was a more romantic notion of like homesteading and farming. And I just think it's important. And I think a lot of that is still true. I mean, having a flexible schedule, there is something to be said for that. You know, I can build my life around other things. I can make it to most of my kids' events. I can get them places because I can figure all that out and mm-hmm. make cheese at a weird time. You know, so those things have been great, but people just have to, I think the more education we can supply young folks coming into it with, or not even young, anyone who's in a midlife change decided I'm leaving the corporate world and I'm going to do this, but maybe they have a cushion that they can fall back mm-hmm. on to do that.
Well, but the question I think is that hangs in the air, or the elephant in the room or whatever, is how do we make a living?
Sure.
Because
right.
we know we can do a lot of things, but where we can use skill sets, but
yeah.
using skill sets and making a living, sometimes there's a giant chasm
yeah.
between those two. So
right.
so that's part of why we're working on going around and recording and talking to people that have been identified, because we want to see what are the common threads,
mm-hmm.
What can we do to share information, how can we
yeah.
pull people together. And I think that's the key, is at the end of this, how do we create something that says, all right, we're going to provide, even if it's once a year, an education piece that brings women together to network and learn from each other and learn the newest and learn how to deal with the standards and regulations and all those
right.
kind of things. So we do what our grandparents and their grandparents did. We're passing along threads of information that say, this is how you inherit the goat industry,
mm-hmm.
or this is how you inherit the cheese industry, or whatever that industry is in farming, so that we see it does continue, that it's not just a haphazard thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's a profession with pride
right.
and a really high quality product,
yeah.
which, you know, goats are amazing in that every part of them is useful.
Mm-hmm.
And the most widely kept animal in the world.
Right, exactly.
And yet they're considered to be, like, worthless in this culture. It's just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that I feel like we have to try to forge ahead and get younger people maybe to see how goats
yeah.
enter into the livestock world and
right.
the dairy world.
Yeah.
And I know it's not just about goats, but it's, for me, it really is, because they're such a great animal. So.
Yeah.
So what's the worst thing that ever happened?
Celeste and I laughed when we read that question, because it's sort of like, well, as you probably would agree, I mean, it goes back to, like, you know, a death. You know, it's when I don't even want to start replaying in my mind the episodes, because there are many over
yeah.
the many years of, and that's, I remember someone saying to me once, well, if you're going to have livestock, you're going to have dead stock eventually. So it's kind of just being prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always hard. It's always tragic, you know, even if and the worst ones are the mother baby scenarios but.
Well, the other flip side of that people often say to me when these things happen and I'm so emotional about it, they say, oh, thank you for caring enough. You're not just being hardened to the cycle of life. And it's like, yeah, easy for you to say, because you're not the one going through it.
Yeah.
But I do think that's That's a huge challenge.
It's a huge part of it. And our kids have been raised with that. I mean, I grew up in a city. I'm from Pittsburgh. So, like, this whole, like, lifestyle was not, you know, I didn't start with that. So for my kids to be here on the farm, I think it's been a great experience for them to see that. Unfortunately, most of it is happy births, fun, adorable, cute, you know, then good, something good to eat at the end, you know. But it's been really amazing to see it through their eyes, too. And it can be awful, of course, too.
Yeah.
You know, lots of tears.
Devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, freak accidents and all of it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. We have a saying, it's like anything's possible.
Totally. Yeah.
With goats, it's always
right.
The case, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
Well, I had a goat that had decided she wanted to be the head of the herd, and she had 6 months of just being, I'm in charge, but I'm not taking any responsibility. So when she kitted, she was taken away from the herd because she was headbutting, and she had her kids, and then when she came back to the herd, the three main goats just really brought her down.
Yeah.
And they didn't believe that she was acquiescing to them, so they would, you know, run her everywhere till she was worn out. And so she got her horns hooked in one of the collars. And fortunately for me, when I know this reorganization is going on, I don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Or I would have lost two goats.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I know what you're talking about. Those crazy things.
It really
you could see that coming, right?
You just couldn't see it coming. Mm-hmm. So anything's possible.
But that's also kind of answers the next question in a way, too. Like, what's the favorite, you know, what's the favorite story? I mean, it's kind of the same thing. Like, being able to have that rescue, or for my kids to be able to see, like, babies being born. And that's like a really, that never gets old. You know?
I totally agree.
You know, it's just
every day is something, isn't it? And
right.
It's often good.
And I remember the first time when my daughter, I couldn't help because I said, I'm in the cheese room. I can't come out. And like, I've got my, you know, sanitized everything, blah, blah, blah. You're going to have to see if she needs help. And she actually had help pull a baby out. You know, I was like, that's really cool to be 10 years old and
builds confidence.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
That's
been really fun with seeing the kids and their involvement and every year. Yeah.
Oh. So what do you think is the future of making a living with goats? If you were
we ask this question all the time. Where's this going?
I know. And if you were to just think, okay, in a perfect world where everybody had what they needed, you know, what is the future of goat keeping?
So not even necessarily making a product from it, but just having the animals. I mean, I feel like there's huge interest in that. Every year we never have trouble selling all our kids. People are out there. There is a subculture of the goat. We call, you know, it's the goat world. There is definitely a huge network of people, I think, all over the country. As much as it's not as culturally ingrained as other parts of the world. But see, I don't know. That's where the meat and dairy worlds are a little bit different. And then the show goat, that's a whole other subculture. I mean, to me, it seems fairly thriving.
Yeah.
Whether or not there's money being made, I don't know.
Well, the business of goats,
that's
what we say.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about that part of it. All I know is what I know. I mean, our business is just to make, is having our cheese products, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, I mean, so far so good, but we are always keeping an eye on how the competition affects us. Is there a restaurant recession that we need to be thinking about, you know? Americans still mostly want to buy the cheapest food available.
That's right, yes.
They just do. It's just, I think that's just a normal human thing, though. What can I get the cheapest? Whether, you know, I don't think it's, I'm not trying to judge because I'm guilty of it too with things like, let's go. We don't have to have the top line everything, but how do you challenge, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, where that market is. Well, I also think, you know, one of the questions that we need to ask ourselves is, and I alluded to this before, is how do we bring along young people, and it's particularly women who are goat herders. How do we bring those women along to help them to be in the business of goats and really be in the business of learning how to make a living? What are all the parts of that animal, even the poop, that has the ability to make us a piece of our living? And once we convince more and more young people, I think that has a promise of opening up the door for culturally.
Yeah.
Because so many people are interested. Right. I mean, if you go on Facebook, there are lots of, I don't know about general goat pages, but there are lots of like naturally healthy or whatever, people looking for advice. It's freaky because
yeah.
so many of those people have no clue, and they right. have lots of dead babies and
yeah.
lots of dead
goats. Oh, that sounds
awful.
Yeah.
And they love to take pictures of the dead babies. And
I'll be staying away from that page. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if it makes sense to really be kind of hard about it and say to people, you might want to make sure you have another job. Like, you know, you might want to approach this as, realistically, this may not be a full-time money-producing job. You might want to really have to think about that. Because mm-hmm. I know Sasha, I think, and I can't speak for her, don't, you know, but...
Yeah, I can interview her.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah. I know that she's been trying to make a go of it with the herd chairs, but I don't think it's enough, you know, and we do other things. If I was only milking goats and making cheese, I don't think it would be enough. And that's why we have the Airbnb. That's why we do the pawpaws, you know?
Well, so, it's also hedging your bets, because when one thing, this
real.
Is our business model too.
Yeah.
If one
yeah,
thing
similar.
Changes.
You do
yeah, we
things.
Do a lot of
yeah.
different things. So if one thing changes
exactly.
or evolves into something else, we're either ready or we're going to pass it on or incubate
mm-hmm.
with the young person. They
yeah.
take it on. So we're just always saying, we need to have several eggs in that basket.
Yep.
So with one going away,
yep.
we don't lose the farm.
Kind yeah.
of thing.
And I think that people should really be realistically told that. It's not the way it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't, where the traditional roles of maybe the man was doing the farming and the woman was taking care of kids and, you know, that's gone. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you could live off that one sole income from farming. I mean, who's doing that? I mean, a lot of people, even in traditional agriculture, they still have the off-farm job, you know?
Yeah, and the debt.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
that's one thing.
And,
yeah, one
yes.
thing I do see in more, in especially with women working in a more sustainable way, when you look at it as trends, you can see they have less debt.
Mm.
They're producing more
mm-hmm.
on less land.
Yeah.
They're networking more. It's just, I don't see that
that's
here.
Yeah.
I would like to see that here.
Right.
But they're in other parts of the country, they're forming groups
uh-huh.
and lots of people working, women working together
yeah.
to help each other. And I would really love to see more of that here
mm-hmm.
because I feel like we need to learn from each other. As women, we often, especially in the world of wanting to be more sustainable, we tend to do things differently and we have to be more creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can learn so much from each other.
Right.
Because we'll just screw up in a different way, you know.
Everyone's got something.
That's right.
But it's true. I mean, people need to understand, you know, everyone, we've only met once as a group with this grant. And one person said, well, people need to know that someone else in your family has to have a full-time job. This can't be. And I wasn't ready to just take it quite that far. She just has a different model. They went into it knowing that, well, she was never going to give up what she was doing for employment, and he was going to take the risk of giving up what he was doing and jumping into the goats. Whereas we pretty much bootstrapped the whole thing. We did baby steps the whole way and finally worked our way up, that, you
mm-hmm.
know, Chris and I did. But just so young farmers and women under, you know, obviously the women, that, you know, just being realistic.
Well, one of the things in any business, whether it's the goat world or something on Wall Street, is that you have to be able to make a plan and
yep.
you have to be able to look at what's your cash flow got to be.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's because you have a lot of savings or you want to take out a loan, but you're going to bleed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It might be 3 or 4 years before
yeah.
you actually make money. And that would be somebody who's getting it right.
Right.
So, because if it all comes too soon, then you mess that up too. So the world of capitalism, which is
what
we're really talking
mm-hmm.
about, has its rules, and one of them
yeah.
is you falter in the beginning. You're not going to make that much money, and I think we all come with this idea that, oh, we're going to do so well, and, you know, well, some of us don't have that attitude. I know
well,
what it takes
yeah,
to get
right.
there.
And preserving your own health and sanity in the process. I mean, you know, you work really hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing for, I think, you know, our kids to see, because they're sort of that, they're 16 and 12, sort of, we had discussions about, you know, family farm versus career,
mm-hmm.
you know, stability versus unknown. And
mm-hmm.
it's interesting. I mean, you can see where It's a good thing to start analyzing when you're younger.
To learn that skill
set. To talk about, for sure. Well, just to talk about, well, what do I want in life and what is important to me? Am I okay to live with unpredictability or do I crave, you know, routine and do I need to know there's no worries tomorrow? Because, you know, this stuff, I mean, stuff can happen.
No worries tomorrow. We live in the wrong government.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with goats, I mean, we've never had it, but I know that a sheep farmer in, I think, the Lancaster area, he had an abortion storm last year. So what do you do then? You have no milk.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that can happen. Like, you know, there's just so many little things to be aware of and to be thinking about.
Yeah.
And a lot of those major ones, that's, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years and have never had anything close to like, oh my God, are we going to be able to, it's never, we've always been swimming in milk. You know, it's
that's
always worked
thing.
Out.
That's a good thing.
And we've also, you know, we've developed our herd. We've bred for hardiness. We don't necessarily breed for the most and the best, or the most butterfat or the most production. We want an animal that's going to be able to make it here, that can live in these conditions, that can, you know, put up a fight against the worm load and stuff like that. So everyone's got a different approach like that, too. And we also have a little bit more of a business model with the goats. As much as I love kidding season and all this stuff, it's a business. And you sometimes have to make the decision to call animals and say, this animal doesn't make us any money, and we're feeding it all this grain. And you have to be able to make those decisions. Like, you've got to be able to separate out that part. And some people, that's harder.
Yeah.
I love all the goats. I can't decide.
Yeah.
Well...
Well, like I like to say, they're not my pets. They got a job to do. And
yeah,
so do
right.
I.
Yeah, and that's how we approach it.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important thing for people to ask themselves, you know, anyone who's getting into it. Like, because I think we've probably gotten a little hardened to it over the years because we've, you know, because it is a business model. But I remember the first time when Chris brought this little, you know, baby that wasn't going to make it, and he was trying to give it, you know, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. I mean, now we know more like, oh,
it's not going to have
gonna,
a good life.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's clearly not going to make it, no matter what we do.
That's right.
And we still do the hair dryer, and we do all the massage.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
we do, you do, but there is a point where you have to step away and say, we've done everything we can do.
So what is the one piece of advice you...
Haven't we covered this
yet? No, not the advice part. This is important, because this is, to me, the advice thing is... It's sort of like bringing forward my grandmother or my great-grandmother, you know, some advice that she would have given me. But
I don't have that sage wisdom yet.
Okay, so what's the best advice you were ever given?
Oh, that I was ever given about all this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure how much
or
we
in
got
life.
Her.
Or in life. It doesn't have to pertain to those
Wow, okay. I guess I am thinking about in terms of our business. And it's interesting how people don't really tell you. I mean, I don't feel like anyone's ever said you really need to consider this. We just kind of went all in. And I feel like it's a lot of it has been just learning as we go on the job training, you know?
So there was nobody who gave you some sage advice in life that's been
You're putting
useful.
Me on the spot. I'd really have to think about that. But I mean, you know, I feel like I have, this isn't really advice, but I mean, I grew up in my family, there was very little risk taking, my parents both had very stable jobs with benefits and all these great things. There was never a discussion, never a worry about anything like that. Nothing about college, no worries, right? And so it's just, to me, it's kind of interesting that here I am in a pretty kind of opposite situation. And that's an internal struggle for me sometimes, too, you know, because part of me still, there's that pull towards stability. And I think over the years, that is one thing that Chris and I have tried to, we have tried to make this feel that way, not be, to have elements where, yes, it's a bunch of little things, but tied together, it feels like something we can count on to live, you know?
Well, and if you measure the other bits of having... making your own schedule a lot of the time,
right.
And things to do with the kids, and eating healthier and tax deductions and all these other things that we don't really look at in a business plan.
All the other stuff that's valuable in your life. Exactly.
Yeah, it really, that really takes us to a high level of what I like to say is homeland security. You know, where we're making a lot of our own rules.
Yeah.
Where our kids are looking to see, they're able to learn how to live life versus somebody else showing them how. And I think we forget a lot of these intangible things that are really tangible when we're looking at the life that we've chosen for ourselves.
Exactly.
Because if you work somewhere and you get that paycheck every week, tomorrow you could be told you don't have a job. And that paycheck comes from one source, where your paycheck comes from many sources.
Right.
And I think this is the message we need to carry forward in these interviews that we're doing and you're sharing with us, is that, like you said, somebody needs to say, you may still have to have another job. Mm-hmm. Or somebody needs to say, you're going to have to find a lot of eggs to put in that basket to make a living. And then sharing that knowledge of what comes forward. So young people can come behind us and maybe the next generation actually makes goat cheese be a mainstay of everybody's diet.
Right. Or, you know, I'm thinking of Celeste. Like, she didn't even know anything about Sarah or... How do we get the younger generations to even be aware of some of the resources that may be available to them? And that's, I don't know, you know, that's
mentoring. That is really mentoring.
It is. And how do we make sure that happens? And I think we've been actually it's been great. We've had, our biggest success with employees has been women. Those have been our best employees by far over the years have been the women we've employed. The men, I have to say, and Chris would concur that they have not been as reliable. Not as caring with the animals, all these things. And, you know, Sasha worked here for 7 or 8 years. I mean, how would you get that? That's pretty awesome. And we pay well above minimum wage. I mean, we give people, you know, we try to share the wealth from our business. You know, people are making, for what they're doing, I feel like it's pretty okay. I mean, obviously I can't provide paid vacation and medical benefits. I mean, you know, we can't do that. But I feel like we have allowed Sasha and Celeste and another employee, Megan, to learn a lot over the years. They've been able to come here and we've given them a lot of freedom to take on managerial positions, and they've probably learned a lot how they can apply things to their farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to do it here, where it's helped us and helped them. So,
and
that's kind of a neat thing to be able to say.
Yeah, and how do you measure that? You know, you can over time see how that influences the community. And so a lot of these things that we're doing, that you and I are talking about, they get lost in when we start massaging and looking at what have we done.
Sure.
What's the bottom line for the taxes? But we aren't measuring all these other things that come to play that really influence the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the value sometimes of what we do.
Right.
Just sharing.
And you don't even think about it. I sure don't until I just thought about it right now.
Yeah.
About how great to be able to employ other people for an extended period of time, which shows, you know, some, I think, loyalty, and that we must be pretty okay to work for if you're sticking around, right?
Yeah, you're investing in each other.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm. And Celeste is actually she makes cheese when, you know, we do take I can go on a vacation, actually. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
To have an employee that can step into that role and be there. And I know she's going to be there. I can count on her. I mean, that's...
Dependability, for sure. So, is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
I mean, no, not. I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly.
Thanks to Michelle Gorman for sharing her ideas and expertise. Technical assistance and photography is provided by Kat Harrier and Devin Kennedy. This program is a part of a collaboration between Rural Action and NCSARE Research and Education. In future podcasts, we'll be interviewing a variety of people who are connected to the specialty dairy product industry, plus talk about how to make a living by supplementing a dairy business with other products produced by the animal. Marketing, branding, animal welfare, standards and regulations, and more will be covered in upcoming podcasts. For more information, visit www.ruralaction.org. Copyright 2018 by Rural Action and Blue Rock Station, LLC.